just curious if it might cut down on things like all the proliferation of AI slop and the rage engagement posts just looking for that.
Well, that's interesting because why does that stuff exist and why does it work and why is it out there? That's very interesting as to why that stuff is. So how did it get into your feed, Alex?
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Space Tomatoes podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Havoc, and we're here with our other host,
Alex. Hello, welcome.
And today we're joined by a special guest, Wouter Constant. Hopefully, I said that correctly. He is a
not at all, Havoc. Awesome. That's okay.
He is a historian, a researcher, and a Noster expert. And we're here to dig into Noster. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about what you're working on, what your mission is with Noster. How did you get involved?
So let's start with how I got involved. So the short background on me is that I on the formal side, I studied economic history at university, and my only first and only proper job was in IT consulting for sensor systems and radio networks and that type of stuff. But for the most part, I've been interested in distributed computing, and these are decentralized compute systems. You can think of stuff like torrents. Maybe you and your audience is aware, is like downloading or pirating data or software and stuff. There are other systems. Eventually, my main interest became Bitcoin, which is the largest decentralized compute network out there. And eventually, I got aware of Noster, which is an open protocol for publication and maintaining social networks. And so it was already in my field of interest. And the problem with the web as it is and social media and social media platforms as they are, there are myriad of problems there. And I identified Noster as potentially being a large part of the solution of a lot of the woes that we have currently in this realm. So that's why I got enthusiastic and I started to dedicate myself to the cause, as they say, because the Noster itself is, like I already mentioned, it's like an open system and nobody owns it. There's just some guy that came up with the idea. He published the idea, and there are other people that caught on to the idea and started working on the idea. But there's no organization or business or anything behind it. So yeah, it's just an open system and a whole bunch of people that are motivated and enthusiastic about it.
All right. So I guess, you know, first question for those that aren't knowledgeable about Noster, what is it? Why would I use it? Why do I care?
It depends on who you are, of course. Because for the most part, there are content creators and content consumers, basically. That's most of what the web is, right? The web's a bunch of data or information, and that data is produced by people and is consumed by people. So there are people on two sides of that end, or both in some capacity from time to time. But I'll get into that. What the point of Noster is two things. So the first thing is to provide what we call censorship resistance, and that's a technical term used within distributed computing to mean that things are resilient against failure, against attacks, let's say, because the internet itself is such a technology. It was first initially developed by the military in order to create communication networks that were resilient against attacks or failure. As you can imagine, it's very useful for the military to have such things, which results in this notion of censorship resistance, being that a third party cannot intervene within two people interacting or exchanging information. The second part of Noster, because the first part is already provided by the internet itself. Technically, you can just host, everybody can host a website or do stuff on various things. The problem comes in where this notion of network effect. And this is because network effect, to briefly address this, is this notion that the value of a network increases exponentially the more nodes or participants a network has. So the easy example would be telephones. If there's only one telephone in the world, it's absolutely useless. If there are two telephones in the world, now it starts to become useful because you need to at least call that person. But you can imagine this, that more and more telephones start to pop up in the world. You can start to call more people up until the point where almost everybody has a telephone and you can start to accept it as a norm and start to construct other systems on top of it and integrate it into society as a whole. So now it is assumed that everybody has a telephone number, every business has a telephone number. Basically, every form you're going to have to fill in your entire life has a field for a telephone number there that is probably even required. So we're able to start integrating that system because of this notion of a network effect. And what happened on the internet is that platforms such as X or like what used to be Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, they started to capture this network effect, where what it boils down to is that everybody is there simply because everybody's there. And at the same time, because you're using this platform that is owned by someone or a particular company, you are running this notion, this censorship risk. I mean, you're there at the behest of the fact that you're there is determined by the owner of the platform. The owner of the platform can kick you out at any time for any reason. So you're running a censorship risk. Even though, and you're benefiting from the network effect. And what Noster tries to do is to give you both. So it tries to give you censorship resistance while maintaining network effect. Because that's the whole point of the system. You can still be on, because right now the network effect is at YouTube, let's say. You are censorship resistant in the fact that you can go to Rumble or Odyssey or whatever marginal platform is out there, but the key word is there is marginal. You lost access to the network effect. You're self-marginalizing the moment you go to another platform or host things on your own website. And that's fundamentally the point that Noster tries to solve. And that's useful for content creators that want to keep their audience, and that's useful for the audience that wants to stay in contact with their content creator.
Right. And
so go ahead. Is Noster's purpose or goal to replace platforms such as YouTube and Facebook and all those things to have people congregate there rather than these other places that they've been using?
So the short answer is yes. The long answer would be for the most part. And my little side note to your question is that Noster is not a place. So Noster is a language. It's a protocol. So it's just a means by which you you communicate with each other. These platforms are very specifically a place, whereas Noster itself is just a protocol, and it stands for notes and other stuff transmitted by relays. That's NOTS, notes. Or other stuff, which notes are like, you can imagine like tweets, and then the other stuff is describing that it could also be anything else, right? It could be pictures or long form articles or recipes or whatever you can whatever it is that we share on the internet, and it's transmitted by relays, and relays is the word we use for basically a server, and those are the places. So the notion of a place is still there. The crux of the matter is that you're flexible as to what place that it is that you're using, and we can still leverage these places as if they're platforms for what they're good for. And for the most part, platforms as such are very good in congregating particular type of people in relation to a particular subject or that type of stuff, where it's logical for these people to come together and interact with each other, maybe on in relation to a particular subject or. Whatever it is. So platforms as such can still exist. The whole point is that you are, the moment you're getting kicked out of such a platform or treehouse, let's just call them treehouses, right? The people can conjure in a particular treehouse, and the treehouse owner says, you're not welcome anymore. You're not, all the relationships that you've created while you were in the treehouse are still there. Because the whole point of censorship resistance, or in other terms, freedom of association, is you're still free to associate. Just the fact that the flip side of that is that the freedom of association is that those platforms have complete liberty as to what policy that they want to enact, right? It's their treehouse. They can let in or kick out anybody that they want. It's just that all the subsequent relationships that are there underneath, the people that I met in that treehouse, I still have those relationships. That treehouse owner cannot interfere with me interacting with anybody else. It only has control over what happens in that particular treehouse. Because none of the users are bound to that treehouse anymore, as they are with the Facebook treehouse, basically. We liberated ourselves from the censorship risk that control that Facebook treehouse now has, simply because of it captured the network effect and what I explained earlier.
So on the relays, are relays something, you know, someone with technical literacy can set up on their own, or are the relays more broadly kind of defined and purposed as relays? How does that portion work?
Relays are barely defined at all, actually. So okay. From a protocol perspective, the only thing that is defined in relation to a relay is the language that is spoken to with the relay, which is very simple. It's just connect to the relay, query the relays, like, I want to have these things, I want to have things with this name or by published by this person or with this particular attribute, whatever it is. And you can post stuff to the relay. And so you can say to the relay, here's my stuff, please take care of it. And that's all that's defined from a protocol perspective. And then subsequently, what the relay is from a functional perspective, that can be anything. And that also answers your question, is that, yes, if you're reasonably technically literate, you can just run your own relay because it can be your personal server or your personal inbox, let's say, for all the stuff that you publish, that your audience can fetch that stuff from. And that's a very basic function. But the function can be more complex, where you say, okay, I'm going to run a relay that is only there for the subject of discussions about frogs, right? And then I'm running a relay, and I'm filtering data, I'm moderating, I'm doing all kinds of complex things, because what a relay just by its sheer nature, because it's somebody's computer, has is it has control over what gets in and what gets out, and that's fine, right? That's the position that the relay is in, and because nobody's dependent on a particular relay, it's fine. It's good that person has the control over his own computer.
Absolutely.
That's liberty.
Yes.
So, and however complex you want to make that function is up to you. So it can be just very basic. It's like, this is just my stuff, or this is just the stuff from me and my friends, or this is stuff that I want to service the entire globe, and I'm going to have like a very complicated data center that's going to service millions and millions of users and everything in between.
Okay.
So what the actual function of a relay is undefined. You're free to make that up yourself.
So a relay is essentially what you make of it. Is a relay also a client or a node on the, I don't know how you, are they clients defined as nodes on the network or clients?
No, no, not at all. Okay. So all that a client is just a piece of software. It's an app. That allows you to create a publication and connect to a relay or relays for multiple of those servers in order to deposit that publication somewhere and connect to relays in order to retrieve publications that you're interested in. And that's for the most part it's just a tool for your computer to interact with the system. And I guess that's an important distinction with apps that in relation to platforms. For example, your Twitter app is not a tool. Your Twitter app is a terminal to a service, because mm-hmm. Twitter is a service, and what the Twitter app does is it allows you to log into that particular computer, Twitter computer. Whereas a Noster client is not that. It's just a tool that allows you to connect whatever server that's out there and interact with, with whatever server that is out there. So a Noster client is more akin to a browser than anything else.
Right. Now, if this is something you don't want to delve into, I am moderately, maybe lightly familiar with Noster, but I'm maybe slightly more familiar with another protocol that's come out recently. Have you heard of Qordle?
Nope, I haven't.
Okay, very, very similar decentralized blockchain suite of apps. It's a protocol, and it's meant to, again, decentralize. I was just wondering what your thoughts were on similarities, but I suppose not relevant.
Well, I can make a comment as to insofar your description is correct, or even if it isn't, because there are very similar attempts like it. Noster doesn't use a blockchain.
Okay.
And I think that's very important. So,
for tracking and tracing purposes, or
no? Because what Noster embraces the fact that there is no, what in technical terms is called a global state. So there is no global state, and there are reasons for this. Noster just doesn't give you any guarantees at all. So it doesn't guarantee that your data is available. It doesn't guarantee that people find you. It doesn't. There are no guarantees into the system. Any guarantee that you want to have there, or you want to increase odds of availability, you're just going to have to solve it in very practical ways. So if you want to ensure that your data is available, get a better server.
Sure.
Or get two servers at the same time and introduce redundancy, right? Or get three of them, right? I get a paid one that is very reliable. I get a free one that may fall down at any moment, and I'll just host one myself in my basement as a backup. These are all very practical approaches as to tackling a lot of the of these issues. The same thing goes for identity. So there is no central identity register anywhere.
Right.
There are certain projects that try to solve this by introducing some type of central identity register. It's not there with Noster. So if I want to ensure that people recognize me as me, I'll just have to leverage my social layer basically in order to do that. So we meet now, right? We're on this podcast. We can exchange identities, and then you're reasonably certain that I am me instead of some fake account. And then we leverage this notion that's called Web of Trust, is that because we have a relationship, you can extend that trust to the point where I have a bunch of relationships, and now it's like I know Bob, and it's like because you know me, you're reasonably certain that this Bob is actually the Bob that you're looking for, because I already have a relationship with that Bob.
Right.
So again, that's a very practical way of approaching things, instead of trying to create all kinds of technical bells and whistles into creating guarantees that I think in the long run are not actual guarantees, and you're creating a lot of complexity overhead
to
get there. So
not to mention the look, there are no safe systems. The only safe system is one that's powered off and not connected to anything. Okay, that's it.
Right.
And that's only as safe as its physical security. So once you set up identity management, then you've got the security problem. And any leak becomes a problem of loss of trust. It becomes a problem of questionable identity as well. If it could be leaked, it was gotten to. If it was gotten to, it can be modified. If it can be modified, then the identity is no longer trustworthy.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, that is pretty cool. And so are there limitations with Noster? So say we wanted to host our show on Noster, are there any issues with hosting, say, large, 8, 10 gig files out there, or?
So Noster itself is a protocol is mostly for text.
Okay. So
and textual data, let's say. So not just, I mean, it could be just data for computer systems, but it's just mostly small chunks of textual data, let's say. But what we realized in the way that we approach Nostr, we can do the similar thing with just data in general. And this is a system or protocol built on top of Nostr. It's called Blossom. And that basically applies the same techniques, but just for data in general. So the answer is yes. The result is that you, on Nostr, you publish your podcast. So there's a podcast episode. You just provide the metadata, the title, the thing, etc., when it was hosted, maybe some notes or whatever information surrounding the podcast, and you provide a link to the podcast itself as a file in that publication. But the way Blossom works is that link is actually just a hash of the podcast file itself, the MP3 file or the MP4 file, in such a way that it doesn't matter where this file is hosted, it can be re-uploaded elsewhere. You might have to include some additional hints if you've moved, but the point of the system is that the link doesn't break. Because now, if you add a link to your publication, if that server goes down, the link is broken and it doesn't work anymore. And the point of Blossom is that you're able to heal that link essentially, in such that it's resilient towards the future. That maybe one particular server goes down where that podcast is hosted, you can re-upload it elsewhere, the link, the initial publication that you had is not broken, so you can still go towards the future. So the answer is yes. As to what the standards of podcasting are, podcasting is still a little bit of a mess. I'd like to see more happening there. But again, it started out with just an idea by some guy that posted it, and other people joining in and starting developing. And there's a whole lot of has been developed already, but there's still a lot more to be developed. So as to what the current state of podcasting on Nostr could be better, but they're working on it. But in theory, sure, yes, there's nothing, no issue there.
What are most of the apps written in or written with for Nostr, or are they? Is there any standard?
Everything, Havok.
Okay,
that's all the things. Awesome. I'm serious. So every language you can imagine, all the systems. So whether it's web apps, desktop apps, Android apps, iOS apps, it's all there. In multiples and et cetera.
Can you filter out Java at your relay? Sorry.
Well, I mean, there's
it's a love-hate relationship. I'm sorry.
To give a somewhat serious answer to that question, there is an Android app. I think it's also a web app, and it's called Zap Store, and it's a Nostr app store basically, and the apps that are there, they're published on Nostr. So I'm able to identify the author or verify the author, because Nostr uses cryptographic keys and all this other stuff. But just like it's a Zap Store, but I'm able to leverage my social network in order to interact with that app store as to whether those apps can be trusted or not. And I know the publisher. I can see who in my network might have installed that particular app. And I guess you can also start to add filters as to in what language that app is written or not. But my point is that you that type of app store does exist. I don't think he added a filter in relation to what language it was written. But you can ask for it. Maybe he'll provide.
That is pretty cool.
As far as security goes, does Nostr differ from these other, well, I know it's not a platform, but does it differ from, say, like Facebook or whatnot? Because I know we've all known people who've had their accounts hacked and stolen, and they've been impersonated and all that stuff. Is there something different about Nostr?
Yes, it's more of a mess, frankly. So So the downside, you can say, when you're on a platform, you have an account on that platform, right? With Nostr, you don't have an account. You create your own persona, your own identity. And that gives, so with that platform, you run this censorship risk. They can ban you. They can pull like a Stalin-esque move and remove you from history if they wanted to. With Nostr, you're at full liberty to shoot yourself in your own foot, right? That's the responsibility that comes. First, with the platform is responsible. With Nostr, you yourself are responsible. Luckily, there is a lot of development as to how to do key management, how to do it safely. A lot of this stuff is informed by the Bitcoin space that runs into a lot of similar problems, obviously, because it uses the same cryptographic technology in order to secure your funds. So where there it secures your money, here it secures your identity. They've been figuring it out for, like, what is it, 17 years now, and making strides there. And we can use a lot of what has been developed there in inside Nostr to make it better over time. I think fundamentally, and this is my personal opinion. I thought about a lot about this, but it's still my personal opinion. I think the ultimate answer to this is not inside some technical scheme, because that's ultimately just kicking the can down the road, especially, but exactly what Hafik already told, any system that you're going to create, it's never going to be watertight. So there's always some assumption there. And the more complexity and bells and whistles you're going to build on top of that, that's also ultimately just more of a moat that's going to work against you the moment that system fails. So what I personally think the answer to this stuff is, in Nostr, your identity is this cryptographic key pair. But the cryptographic key pair is just, it's not your identity, it's a pointer to your identity. What is actually defining your identity for the most part, your persona, is your social context. I am me in relation to other people, right? And I am a different persona in relation to my family, and I'm a different persona in relation to my job, and I'm a different persona in relation to my gamer friends, let's say. And for my gamer friends, my name is different. I'm Dragger Slayer 999, and that's my persona, right? To keep it in an internet context. So, if I operate as Dragger Slayer 999 and I lose my key or my key gets compromised or whatever it is, I still have this social context of all these other gamers that I interact with. And so I can just create a new key and reboot my Dragger Slayer 999 identity and start to reconnect with all these gamers to the point where what defines Dragger Slayer 999 is not actually that key, it's that social context of all these people that Dragger Slayer 999 is interacting with. So I think ultimately the answer to this problem is it should be found there more than in particular technical schemes or systems.
That is a very interesting way to do things, and honestly, just at a cursory examination in my brain, far more security, right? Look, you are known by your circles, by your friends, by your group of people. You've had interactions, you've had experiences, you've had shared ideas, thoughts, everything else, right? An identity document is something that can be forged, can be falsified, it can be made fraudulent. It can be a whole lot of things, but that group of friends will always see you and go, yeah, well, that is Havoc, and we know that's Havoc, and the way the person talks, what they've talked about, everything about this person is Havoc, right? And so that's actually, I think, a better trust model at the end of the day, right? I mean, if you had to badge in your building and walk through a line of 15 to 20 people that all knew you beforehand, there's no fake badge that's going to get you through that. None.
Right.
That's
right.
Pretty interesting.
I mean, in the online sphere, it's what's bagging the question is AI, right? That makes things a little bit more scary. But there's at the first layer of defense against the AI is the cryptographic keys. I mean, AI is not going to fake cryptographic keys. And then when the keys fail, we're going to have to fall back on social connection. And let's hope we're able to. I think ultimately we should be able to figure that out. It's just mostly a cultural problem, right? It's some boomer or it's like some granny that's fooled by some fake picture of or a phone call of their supposed granddaughter that needs money, right? Yeah. It's just a cultural adjustment as to being aware of what type of things can be faked and how things can be faked, as to know how to deal with that or circumvent that or interact with that. Because I do agree with you that ultimately those social relationships are going to be deeper than anything an AI can on a surface level fake. So I think for the most part, how we deal with the fakery capability of AI is a lot of just adjustment that we have to make as humans as a whole. I don't think it's an insurmountable problem as such.
How does Nostr, or do they, is it up to the user? And I'm actually on the, I'm more aligned with user taking the action. I use Telegram as pretty much one of my only real, like, social media apps, news, get stuff. The benefit to it is I get a, you know, fairly censorship-free environment. It's not 100%. It's still owned by someone, but they've been pretty good about protecting that. Mm-hmm. Not great. I could point to some examples, but, you know, to his credit, he has told governments to go pound sand at times. But along with that comes the scam bots, the spam bots that are just a constant flow. Is there any concept of, like, a trust rating for a user, like other, you know, people or identities on Nostr see a person doing something and somehow that trust rating for that account or that identity goes down or up if they're, you know, someone that people are, you know, seeing or, you know, doing whatever?
Yeah. So the answer is yes. And those type of systems have existed now for a while. But there's actually a concentrated effort into developing this stuff further out, to the point where there are now multiple competing systems that are being developed in a coherent sense, right? These competing systems are now actively communicating with each other and trying to compare. I say competing, I mean, you can always use them in parallel, because they all have their trade-offs in how they approach this. But the main nomer for this is what we call web of trust. So as I already described, it's like if you have your own defined circle and you can extend that, you can leverage that that social circle in order to gauge the outside world. The main thesis behind the web of trust is basically that it's this notion of six degrees of separation is going to connect you to the entire world. So if it only takes six, right, you're going to cover a whole lot of people with three already. Extending trust three steps down is probably doable for the most part. You're probably going to cover 90% of your problems with that alone. And the remaining 10% might take some more effort or some more diligence, et cetera. I guess that's most of the answer. That's also how Nostr works. So everything in Nostr in relation to problems or issues, it has like this very simple Grok brain approach of, this covers 90% of the issue, and good luck with the 10%. You can figure out the complex stuff for the remaining 10% if you want to, but we're all happy as it is right now with 90%, and we can move on with other things.
We can't hear you.
That's better. Yeah, okay.
There you go.
Leave the mute button off when you're talking. so you were talking about the concept of tree houses, right? And the censorship piece mm-hmm. of that. And you even mentioned the Stalinesque approach. And I remember very clearly, I think it was 2021. I'm a liberty-minded individual. Consider myself a libertarian, but a small L libertarian. Not a party libertarian. That being said, open to whatever people's beliefs are, you should have that for yourself. But one of the things that came up about that, and it was when you said Stalinesque, it was perfect, is I literally woke up in the morning and had all these notifications, and I start going to check these groups, Free Thought Project, you know, Police the Police, you know, other you know, groups that I check in on, see what's going on, chat with people, and they were all gone. And it was like there was just a massive purge in a course of like 2 days of accounts that had, you know, millions of followers, that had, you mm-hmm. know, all this stuff. And really all they're talking about is, you know, again, like the Free Thought Project. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but, you know, the idea being is, you're an individual. You have individual liberties, right? And those should be respected. But so protection against that, right? You've got the ability to have a high value, high trusted network of peers that also can be used to associate that trust down that network chain. Which gives confidence to other users. You've got kind of 90%-ish range, you know, taking care of the problem childs. There's always going to be some. What would you say are the big challenges here? What do people find difficult? Because so far, I set up a Nostra account today, shortly mm-hmm. before we got on. It was very simple. You know, just went to Nostra.org and, you know, said, okay, you know, sign up, and boom, it said, hey, here, copy your keys. Okay. So make a profile. Okay. And type a message, and okay. And here's our app store. Have fun. And I was like, okay, well, this didn't seem difficult. So what do you think the biggest challenge is when it comes to Nostra and potentially its adoption?
So I think the challenge is twofold. The first one is the obvious one, where what is your reason to use Nostra, or to let go of my own being a stickler for the fact that it's not a location? What is your purpose to be on Nostra? It is to either consume content or interact with other people, like be social or whatever it is. That implies that there is stuff there that you find interesting, or that there are people there that you find interesting. And this ties back to this capture of network effect. Like if you join Twitter, there are already millions of people there, and there's also already a whole bunch of content there. So it's going to be easy for you to find people that are interesting to you and content that is interesting to you. On Nostra, because the numbers are a lot lower, it's going to take a lot more effort in order to find people that are interesting to you and content that is interesting to you. Or maybe it's not there, right? I mean, if your interests are marginal enough, you might be the first one. That's the obvious one. It's like the chicken egg bootstrapping problem of a social network, let's say. The second part is the fact that this is a different paradigm, and for most users, when they join, they have to do two things at once. So they have to put in the effort in order to create their own, like find people to follow or connect with other people, find content, that type of stuff, while also at the same time having to learn this new paradigm of how things actually work. The fact that you're not stuck with one app. You can move to any Nostra app that's out there, and you can just use them in parallel. What relays are, and how you should manage your relays, and that you have these inbox relays and outbox relays, and that you and this is stuff where you publish to, and this is stuff where you, and these are places where you fetch data from, and that you have relay feeds where these are like particular tree houses, let's say, where certain people congregate, and you can just look at that, look at the feed from that tree house. And there's this, just the fact that this client, this software that you're using is a tool and it's not a service that you're logging into. And there are all these aspects as to, it's not necessarily complicated. It's just different. Users have to get aware of that, but also developers are still, we're all getting a grasp on this new paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
It's just Nostr was invented, let's say, in 2020 as an idea, and we're kind of unwinding or unfolding this idea as to what it actually is, and we're still trying, basically figuring out as to what it is that we found here, basically. That we've unearthed, and that's also true for developers and UI designers, and how users should what's the best way for users to interface with things, or for users to learn things. So it's all rather new, and I guess those are the two things that are like the hurdle as to how is stuff designed, and how are new users taught or introduced to this new stuff and navigating that terrain on the one hand, and the fact that it's new, that there's just not a lot of people there. So it's not trivial to interact with and find the people that you find are interesting. It just takes effort on both sides. So the first cohorts are going to be like early adopters and that type of stuff. And that's just natural, and that's fine, right?
Absolutely.
I'm not gunning for your grandmother just yet. She'll get there eventually. I'm sure
we could always go back to the early days, right? Of you know, just beyond BBCs with the dial-up providers, right? And you had what, CompuServe, and you know, then came AOL. But like CompuServe was geek paradise, right?
Right.
In the beginning, it just wasn't a lot of like, you know, Joe and Jane Blow getting on CompuServe to, you know, be on the internet. It was the, you know, the geeks. It was the, you know, technically literate people typically working in technology or around research of it. So, yeah. Is there work going on to like I said, the sign up was incredibly easy. Is there a project somewhere in Nostr to maybe create, to look at how things flow for a user? Like, I know in each app you're going to have your UI experience developers, et cetera, but as an overall, as an ecosystem, are there any people looking at how does this flow? How do we make it maybe a little easier on, you know, Joe and Jane Blow?
Yeah, there are, but it's again, it's utter chaos. So there's no structure, rhyme, or reason to anything that this band of crazies is doing. So sure, there are that people that look at this stuff, but they'll have to lobby and politic their way into the. It's like herding cats.
I've worked for engineering companies almost all my life, so I'm very well aware, and I cannot imagine having 580 lead developers on different projects coming together, right, to try and, yeah, so I, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, it looks like it's got some great polish to it. I'm definitely excited to dig in on it, and hopefully, you know.
Oh, certainly. So I'm especially in the last, let's say, 2 years, there are a couple of clients or apps that have definitely matured very, very well, and are very user friendly, even for like the normal computer or phone user. Let's say they look like your everyday professional app, and they feel like it, and they work like it. That stuff definitely is there. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. And here's a question Mr. LX asked me when we were talking about this, and I'm just going to prime it so he can ask it. You said something about dark web or something. Do you remember?
No, I don't remember that.
No, yeah, well, so I'm going to say it for you then. He goes, when we were first talking about it, he goes, so is this like the dark web? And I was like, no.
Well, I mean, just keep it in context, because I know very little about technology stuff. I don't even have my own cell phone. My wife has a cell phone, but I don't have one by choice.
Like, that's not illiteracy. That's personal choice. He doesn't want a phone.
It is.
And I personally am jealous.
When I say things like, is it the dark web? I genuinely don't know. So I really had no idea when he said we have a Noster expert coming on. I'm like, I have no idea what that is.
The dark web is just everything that happens on the internet that is not nicely named. Basically, it just doesn't have a nice name tag to it. We have this central index out there that gives names to things, such as Google. So you can type in google.com into your web browser, and it sends you to the right server. But there are a lot more servers out there, and a lot more computers that don't have this nice name tag to them, and that all that stuff is what the dark web is. From a technical point. It's not necessarily the dark web, no, because a lot of these relays or these servers still have like a similar type of name tag to them. It does use from a technical perspective, it uses WebSockets, so it's not HTTPS :// it's WSS :// and then basically like whatever any website it would be the same. What it is, it's a new way. So, like, like I mentioned, it's a protocol. Another example of a protocol is email. So, what email does, it allows you to use whatever service that you use, be that Gmail, be that Proton, to exchange mail between each other. So, we don't all have to use Gmail. I repeat, people in the world, we don't all have to use Gmail. You can, if you have Gmail, you can send an email to somebody with Proton Mail and vice versa, right? And that's because email itself is built on this open standard that all these different services just understand that they can communicate with each other. And Noster is similar in that sense. It's better because you're not tied to a particular service anymore. You can use any service that you want. So you don't have an email address at a particular server. You just have this name that you've generated for yourself out of nowhere, and that's what Noster is. And then what you can do with it is, well, we're kind of rebuilding the entire web. So it started out with a Twitter type use case where you're sharing these short text messages and publicizing them and interacting with each other publicly, but then somebody wrote a little standard for long form articles, and now you can share long form articles with each other. We've built this Blossom standard that I've mentioned, so now we can share also videos and podcasts or music with each other. Somebody built a recipe app, so now we're sharing recipes with each other.
That's awesome.
Game scores. I already mentioned publicizing applications themselves. So you have like an alternative app store on Noster. So basically, all the things that you can imagine that we're doing on the web, you can do on Noster. The main difference is that I don't have to create an account on YouTube in order to post videos, and then create an account on Instagram to post pictures, and create an account on X to post these tweets. And now I have like 10 different accounts where I'm posting on all these particular places. No, what I do is just I generate my own identity. I then create a publication, whatever type of publication that is, be that a tweet, an article, or a video. I sign that publication with my newly generated identity, and people can then just follow me. They don't follow me at some place. They just follow me, and they know where to fetch my stuff. And if they are using a app that is built for tweets, they can see my tweets. And if they're using an app for long-form articles, they can see my long-form articles. And if they're using an app for videos, they see my videos. And if they're using an app that has all three of those features, they can see all those three things at the same time. The point is that it's not tied to a particular place anymore. As a content creator, you're just publicizing your content, whatever that content may be. And as a user, you're just interfacing with that content, whatever app it is that you're happy to use.
Is there any kind of financial component or incentive the same way that, say, Facebook or YouTube sells ad space or content creators would receive as compensation or something like that?
So there are two parts to this question. So the first part is, to the answer to this question. The first part is whatever the incentive is for somebody to do something, that depends on what it is that that person is doing and how they set that up. So, and that goes for the web as it is already. what's my motivation to maybe host my own relay and post my stuff? Because I want to. Maybe what is my incentive to host a relay to for my friends? Because I want to, and I don't require any monetary compensation for this stuff. I'm a business, right? I'm a weather station or whatever business it is that I am. I might decide to run a server in order to facilitate my business. Businesses already do this. They get money by their main business, but they also run an internet server in order to facilitate their business. So there, the incentive model is the main business and the fact that they're selling soap or whatever it is that they're selling, right? Part of that is that, like, they need an office and they need, like, overhead for organizational purposes and parking space. I don't know, whatever. And they also need, like, a computer server somewhere. So that's the incentive there. Let's say a newspaper, how a newspaper does it, it sells ads, right? You can also sell ads on Noster, that's fine. So whatever the incentive model is or business model is that you have, you can just apply that on Noster. That's no problem. I don't have an answer because it's all the possibilities out there already.
But it would be,
and that's just the reality of the world. Same as we already have a working internet as it is, with all the variety of incentives that already exist out there. So that's the first part of the answer.
Okay,
but that
I was just curious if it might cut down on things like all the proliferation of AI slop and the rage engagement posts just looking for that kind of stuff.
That's interesting because. Why does that stuff exist and why does it work and why is it out there? That's very interesting as to why that stuff is. So how did it get into your feed, Alex? It got into your feed because there was a system that determined that it was relevant to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that stuff relevant to you? It's absolutely, I'm just going to fill that in for you. It's absolutely not relevant to you, right? So what system is it that you're using that decided that stuff is relevant to you? And why are you using that system?
Yeah.
The only reason that I'm going to fill in that answer for you as well, it's like the only reason that is because of this network effect, because you don't have a lot of other options as to use YouTube because all the stuff is there. And if you want to scroll through some shorts or whatever it is, then or TikTok or whatever doom scrolling activity that people engage in, that's fine. But it's they don't have a lot of alternatives, and it's that particular system that decides what is relevant to you. That means that everybody is now trying to. There's one central system, one central algorithm that all these other people are trying to game. Because they have one target. They can all attack the single target, the single algorithm, and they can do a whole bunch of iterations as to what works in order to catch your attention and game the algorithm and get their slop in front of your eyes. With Noster, you're free to apply whatever algorithm that it is that you want. And if you decide to, like the base algorithm that a lot of Noster app provide you is what's called reverse chronological order. This is just everyone that you follow, you just see their stuff and you see the latest stuff that they posted first. And if you scroll down, you see the stuff that they've posted earlier. And That's an algorithm. It's a very boring, boring basic algorithm. You can now start to make it more complex, but you can use a lot of factors for that. You can start to leverage your social network and say, okay, I have this cluster of people that all happen to be chefs, and I don't just want to see what all these cooking chefs post, but I want to extend this based on some cluster analysis of the people that they follow, what type of content that they're posting. So now I'm basically just digging around in like the chef ecosystem, where this algorithm determines that this is the type of content that I'm seeing, or whatever any other type of algorithm that you can imagine, where the whole where the algorithm that you choose in the first place is part of this notion of relevance. So you pick the relevant algorithm in order for the algorithm to fetch the relevant stuff for you, instead of you're stuck with the algorithm that is there because everybody's using that particular platform, and then that algorithm supposedly deciding as to what is relevant to you. It's a different paradigm in that sense, and it should cover or help a lot against this slop invasion, because it's just, if you're producing slop and everybody's using all kinds of different algorithms in order to facilitate themselves in their actual interest, they no longer have a single target to attack anymore, where it's just one party that is distributing the feed to all these other people. Within the Nostr context, it just doesn't work like that anymore. So there's no incentive to actually try this type of spam anymore, because hopefully we already nipped it in the butt by it being, for the most part, pointless.
Yeah, I actually find that chronological or reverse chronological order to be, I like it. That's my favorite, because I can always go back and find a post or find that note or find that picture or whatever it was, because I know who it was, etc. Right? You go to, you know, Facebook. I haven't been on that thing for well over a decade now, but you know, Facebook was the same. All of these, Twitter or X or whatever, you know, the way they posted is going to, what you see is going to alter in real time. It's funny. I was just doing this with my wife, and I'm, you know, she's like, well, I'm just watching this stuff. And I'm like, why don't you put that thing down for a little bit? And she goes, well, it's interesting. And I'm like, of course it's interesting. Go and find a firefighter picture and just hover over it for a few seconds and then start scrolling through your feed, and then hover over the next one that comes up, because another one will, for a few more seconds. Next thing you know, your feed's going to be full of firefighters. Do it with cars. Right. Do it with puppies. You know what I mean? And it's literally being curated live and in real time to feed you stuff, right? And if you hover over a division of the populist style post to, you know, enrage you pro or con for some thing, you're going to start seeing that come out in your feed, and it'll get more and more intense until you go and try and, you know, reset that algorithm, right? So one of the things that's interesting to me is I've found a lot of people, they have an aversion to the chronological order, because, and I mean, look, this is just human psyche, right? So the psychology of it, it's that dopamine hit. You know, you get your puppy feed going, and you're, you know, it's just feel good, feel good, feel good, feel good. Whereas you go into chronological, and not everything is just hitting just right. You know what I mean? It's just a post. Okay, well, I have to read that, and I'm going to read this next one. And so I found a lot of aversion to these types of social media, the newer social media that is trying to be censorship resistant, that's trying to allow the individual liberty to have the freedom of association to listen to or not what you want to, not based on what someone else says is okay or not. What do you think is a good way, if you're talking to someone that has that aversion, to try and help break them out of that and show them that this is actually a very negative experience for your mind, whereas this is far more positive, or I don't know.
Well, I mean, it starts out with the recognition that What these, as you explained, what these algorithms do is that they feed the thing that you want, but what they're actually monitoring, they're monitoring your behavior, and your behavior is not always an expression of your conscious mind. It's also, it's most often actually an expression of your unconscious mind, and you know, the behavior that you're, the intentions that you have consciously might not always align with the intentions that you have unconsciously. So we're always part of living and being an adult, right? Is moderating your urges, let's say. So you have to recognize that it shows you, it doesn't necessarily show what you want to see from a conscious perspective. It's tapping into mostly this unconscious, unchecked part of yourself. So even from that perspective, it should give you pause as to what it is that you're actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
From a more practical approach is, from a Gnostic perspective, is that there's a time and place for anything. You can choose to do the reverse chronological order, but you also have the option to use whatever type of algorithm that it is that you want, because the point of these larger platforms with the algorithm that they have is that they try to filter an overload of available data, right? There is like millions and millions of minutes of YouTube videos being uploaded every second, or whatever stupid thing that it is. So you cannot watch all the things. It's impossible to watch all the things. So there has to, some filter has to be applied in order to find stuff that is actually that is relevant to you, and that's fine. I guess the main point is that to this person that rather engages with the internet from that perspective than from a more curated form of like I just see the stuff of the people that I follow, is that, okay, but who then dictates that filter? Who's in control of that filter? Wouldn't it be better if you have a choice as to what filter it is that you're actually applying, instead of just being forced to use the filter of TikTok because TikTok just so happens to be the largest platform where everybody else is? So I guess that would be my approach to that. In having that conversation with that type of person.
Okay.
I still have the second part of my incentive question for Alex about the money. It just so happens that the guy that invented Nostr was a Bitcoiner, and by extension, a Bitcoin developer. And you know, his buddies are also a bunch of Bitcoin developers. So when building Nostr, they almost immediately started integrating Bitcoin. So Bitcoin as such is very well integrated into Nostr. So there already are direct micropayments that's completely normalized within most of the Nostr clients that are out there. To the extent that there are like musicians that, however small Nostr and marginal that Nostr may be, those musicians already made more money, however small amounts of money that is, they already made more money in a very short amount of time than they did in many years of being on Spotify. So, I'm not going to make any promises as to what type of models will work, but the payment infrastructure as such, the online payment infrastructure as such, is already there. Nostr is an open protocol, so if you're so inclined, you could integrate credit cards, I guess. Or whatever type of payment system that it is that you want. Just so happens that the people that are working on it right now are not inclined to do so, I guess.
What about Monero and like Zeno? Are those more privacy coin related coins also available on Nostr, or?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, there's a small contingent of Monero people on Nostr, but I'm not aware of any like on a on a software or client level integration of those systems.
That would be cool.
Like you can always share, you can just always share an address, right, and just do the transaction in that way. I'm more talking about like nice integrated buttons where you just click and it sends money, split payments, for example. That's that type of stuff.
Yeah, and that's what I was going for, was the microtransaction, especially with artists or even, you know, I could see homesteaders, right, looking to start Noster and do, you know, essentially an online CSA type of a thing, right, where they grow food, they sell boxes of fresh vegetables from their gardens, and, you know, you pay with Monero. I know a number of people that transact in Monero as much as possible because, you know, there's a level of privacy that now doesn't really is more difficult to obtain with stuff like Bitcoin or Ethereum, etc. Right? With all the KYC.
Well, I mean, like, I mean, from a privacy perspective, what is integrated in Noster is what's called the Lightning Network, and kind of depends on how you approach it. You can be very pretty private with Lightning, but outside of that discussion, there are a bunch of these artisans. Let's say there are people selling soap or ghee or embroidery or paintings or. There's a guy that sells hot tubs, like these wooden barrel hot tubs.
Oh wow!
Like these ash, I think it's ash. They're made out of ash. Saw them in passing. So yeah, there are people that also try to bootstrap this type of stuff, and there are people developing marketplaces, like protocols for marketplaces, that type of stuff. So those things are also occurring on Noster. Yes, very much so.
Well, that's pretty awesome. I'm definitely going to get more engaged with Noster. Like I said, I set up my profile and I do want to play around with it. And I know there are a few communities that have been on it that I want to go and check out and support as well. And of course, support Noster. Alex, do you have anything else you wanted to ask, talk about?
I know a lot more now than I did when I started. I'll give you that much.
Same. I really want to thank you.
If I can do it on iPad, I'm going to try it. I'll fool around with it.
Yeah, it looked like it's all Apple ecosystem, PC, Linux, and Android. So you should be okay.
Nice.
I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I think, I'm not an Apple user myself. So, same. But I think does a tablet use iOS?
Yes.
It does? Okay, then you can have a look at either Damus or Nostur, which is Nostur, I think. Or I think Yakihone is also available for iOS. And then you have three already. And in general, anyone listening to this, if you're going to start, just start. Use whatever app or client it is that you found out there, because the whole point is that it doesn't matter. So use something that you think is like, okay, I can handle this. It's usable at least. Use it for a couple of days and then actively switch to something else and see how what that experience is that you've been active and now all your stuff is still there. All the people that you follow is still there. The feed's still there. Your profile's there. Your posts are there. You're just now using a different app, and then you can start to look around. It's like, okay, what app do I actually prefer, or what app I'm going to use for what particular use case? Because you know they can all make their own decisions in how they display things or what kind of features that they give you. So, experience the liberty of not being stuck with a particular app, but do it at your own pace. That would be my advice there.
I suppose these developers are probably also more open to. Criticism or stuff like that more so than like Facebook. They don't care what you think about their app. It's either take it or leave it.
Yeah, it's very very much the culture is it's most of the stuff is just free and open source, and it's developed in the open, and you can contact the developer teams that are working on this stuff, and you can suggest things or complain, especially bugs. And if you notice an issue or something doesn't work, these developers are very happy if you reach out and tell them, because that's ultimately what they need, right? They need this type of feedback. They cannot notice all the things themselves, so they're, for the most part, they're very happy if users actually get back to them and tell them, it's like, okay, this doesn't work for me, because it means two things. It means, well, that they can improve their app, but for the most part, that somebody's actually using it. And developers tend to be very happy if that's the case. So, go ahead and contact developers. They are, for the most part, they're very open to that.
All right. Well, very cool. Thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. I preloaded you with one question, but before we get to that, if you want to give a rundown of, you know, where people can find your work, what you're working on, what's upcoming for you, and maybe what's the most exciting thing on the horizon with Nostr or with whatever you're working on.
If I have to say one thing that people could go to, it would be Nostr.com. Nostr doesn't have an owner. There's no organization, etc. It just so happens that the guy that owns Nostr.com is very friendly. So he made a very nice open public resource for that. Anyone wants to figure stuff out, they can go there. As for me, and this is a whole other rabbit hole, but I just recently started a foundation with a couple other guys where we're going to do Nostr development, but mostly geared towards building an adequate and safe environment for children.
Oh, wow.
Because this is an entire domain now that is very hot. There are governments that are creating all kinds of crazy, crazy laws for good reason, because there are a lot of problems out there. It's just that the way they're approaching, I don't agree with the way that they're approaching things. So I much rather build solutions for those types of issues, and that's something that we're doing. And you can find more information about that on weboftrustfoundation.com. That's our website over there. And that's it. I mean, let's shine a light on Nostr. It's like, I'm not that important at this stage. So that's that. Nostr.com, Nostr.com, Nostr.com.
All right. Everybody go check out Nostr. It's pretty cool. A little button there. You click on it. It'll open up a window. You put in your stuff. You get your profile. It take four clicks maybe. It was really easy. So give it a shot. Go check it out. I'm going to get on there. We'll publish our public keys so you guys can find us. And you can come connect with us, and maybe we'll have someone else that we've been connected to by then, and you know, we'll start our own little Nostr community, and it'll be awesome. Okay, last,
because that's how it grows, right? I mean, like I already said, you have to have a reason to be there, and the reason to be there is for the most part other people. So that's how it works, right? How about it?
Awesome. We're going to make it happen. I don't see how big we can grow it, but hey, if we can get a handful of people, it's a handful more. And, you know, every individual joining makes the protocol better and the suite of apps more potential, because developers aren't going to develop, you know, I mean, some will, a lot of them will actually, but you know what I mean? The more people come in, the more developers will come in, the more apps will come in, the more polished things will get, and you get to be a part of it from the beginning. And look, I know a lot of you guys joined Facebook back when it was ugly. So, and it still is, but you should leave that app, go away from it now, run screaming, but go to Nostr. All right. And then, so one question we like to ask all our guests is, you know, throughout your life, you know, anyone that was impactful or important to you or whatever, made a difference in your life, who would you give a shout out to? This could be anyone alive, dead, you name it.
Yeah. So for me, it would be a guy named Simon Stevin, and he is a 16th century Dutch guy. He did a lot of things. One of the things that he did was he translated math into Dutch. And that's the reason that all our math language is Dutch. We have like Germanicized math language. So all the Greek language that the rest of the world, and especially English, uses is completely foreign to me. It's always very confusing. But he did a bunch of other things. He also gave the proof, the physics proof for the fact that a perpetuum mobile, so like infinite energy, doesn't exist. He built a sail wagon. So this is like a car with a giant sail that you can ride on a beach, for example, which was one of the fastest vehicles, driving vehicles at the time, simply by how awesome. It was built. And he also did a lot of stuff for like the fortifications. So there you have a lot of Renaissance period fortifications, like these star fortifications. Around cities and places, and he did a lot of stuff in designing that type of stuff, and he did a whole bunch of more things, and he really inspired me because, you know, I'm very jealous because he did all this at a time where you could do a lot of this stuff and it was new, so I've all my life been trying to be a true Renaissance man and do a whole bunch of things, but it's very difficult to do something actually novel and new because, you know, most of the stuff has been figured out. And if you want to do something new, you're going to have to jump into a deep, deep vertical and do like endless PhD stuff. He inspired me to be a Renaissance man and find some novel things to do. And hopefully I'm within this Nosler thing, I'm able to do that. So I want to give props to Simon Steven.
Awesome, awesome. I'm going to actually look up his work now. I'm not familiar with him. Thank you again for coming on. We really enjoyed the time. It was a wonderful conversation. Everyone, you know where you can find us. Get us on YouTube, on Spotify, on X, on Telegram, on iHeartRadio, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Apple, I don't know. We're everywhere. Just go grab us, and you can always go join us on our Telegram channel just by opening up a browser, type in t.me/spacetomatoes, all one word, no spaces, and it'll take you right to Telegram. If you want to come in, chat with us, ideas for a guest, topics, etc., throw them our way. Maybe we'll even exchange some memes. I don't know. Whatever. Make it fun and interactive. And remember, wherever you are, whenever you're watching this, have an amazing day.
See you, everybody.
Thank you, guys.